Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon and welcome to Market View on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero for the workday afternoon. Today we're joined by Sunny Hamid, Director for Wealth Management Financial Alliance. Let's first take a look at how regional markets are doing before we bring Sunny into the conversation. The Straits Times Index is down by 1.1% at 3,245 points. Japan's Nikkei down by 1.8%. South Korea's Kospi down by 2.8%. Australia's ASX down by 2.6%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng down by 1.3%. The Shanghai Composite Index down by 1.1%. Sunny, welcome to the show. First time having you with us in the afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Maybe not the best day to have you. Everything is in the red. But the top of news for us here in Singapore was MAS's announcement this morning that they will tighten Sing dollar policy to counter rising inflation to raise slightly the rate of appreciation of policy band. How much of that is affecting the market here in Singapore?
Well, it was a bit of a surprise, but at the same time, if you look at the big picture, it was something that was in the pipeline sooner or later, just that it came sooner. Singapore is quite unique in the sense that it doesn't have a monetary policy based on interest rates, unlike the Federal Reserve and many other countries. Its monetary policy is based on the exchange rate and guiding something called the Singapore Nominal Effective Exchange Rate, effectively strengthening the Sing dollars during times of inflation and weakening it during times of disinflation or deflation. The idea is basically because Singapore is a small open economy, we basically import almost everything that we need. So in order to fight what we call imported inflation, we strengthen the currency. We guide the currency to a strengthening path. And this is really what the MAS is doing. It's a de facto tightening of monetary policy, but via the strengthening of the Sing dollar so that we don't actually import inflation. So all said, basically, this is really the path that's being taken by many central banks across the world. The Federal Reserve has also announced that it's going to tighten policy. So effectively, what the MAS is doing isn't a surprise, like I mentioned, if you look at it from the bigger picture.
Right. All right. But then what is actually pushing down markets here and across the region? Would that be the lead that we got from Wall Street yesterday, or the worries over the Ukraine, worries over what the Fed might do?
I think it's really the last thing that you mentioned, what the Fed might do. The catalyst were the minutes of the Fed meeting that were released, I think, about a week or so ago. Mm-hmm. Those minutes were actually minutes of a meeting that took place a couple of weeks prior to that. In the meeting that took place prior to this, basically after the usual meeting, the Federal Reserve will have a press release. In the press release, it will tell the markets what was discussed in the meetings and what was the outlook that the Federal Reserve had for various things like interest rates and so on. What wasn't captured in the press release a couple of weeks ago was the fact that there was chatter within the Federal Reserve Committee about actually withdrawing liquidity that has been pumped in since COVID-19. And we must understand that when COVID-19 hit way back in 2020 in March, the Federal Reserve had already printed like $3 trillion into the system. So in total, they had about $4 trillion on their balance sheet, so to say. And that's how you look at the quantitative easing. Within a very short span of time, that $4 trillion became $8 trillion. So they effectively doubled the amount of money they printed in the U.S. monetary system twice within a very short period of time to address the so-called dangers of COVID-19, i.e. Economies were shutting down, there was talk of a depression, and so on and so forth. That liquidity, which has prompted assets, whether it's stocks, bonds, real estate, to go up because money needs a place to go to. Now that they're going to withdraw that liquidity, everybody's scratching their heads and asking themselves, will this now lead to these assets which have been pushed higher to now retreat? Because 1+1, you add liquidity, it goes up. You withdraw liquidity, it comes down. That part, which was not captured in the minutes, because minutes are really capturing what is officially spoken in the meeting. That press release, I stand to be corrected, that was not captured in the press release, but that was captured in the minutes, which was released last week or the week before. So So in the minute, these chatters about withdrawal of liquidity, that really caught the market off guard. The market was expecting this to happen maybe next year. Now the chatter is it's going to happen sooner rather than later. And add on to that, we've had Federal Reserve officials coming out to say, we support this. We support it. And even Powell himself said that in all likelihood, we're going to scale back. The technical word is to let the balance sheet run off, meaning to say whatever bonds we have, we'll let it expire without renewing it, so to say, or without rolling it over. That effectively will draw liquidity. So what the market is doing now is adjusting for something it just totally did not expect. And we all know when market has not priced in something, when it happens, you get this kind of volatility because it's pricing in this thing which it had anticipated to happen early next year, now being brought forward maybe to the middle or even to the end of this year.
Okay, now this volatility that you're talking about directly exactly. In relation to the US, if you look at January as a whole, the markets went up a lot. They came back down yesterday, looked really bad, and then the S&P 500 actually closed not bad. You know, so that volatility is not necessarily going one way. It's not a story of just red. There's also green spots there. So how does an investor here in Singapore take that volatility?
It really depends on what type of investor you are. The people who are bailing out right, left and center are basically the traders who have taken a position. Now, and typically traders go, they do leverage, they take on leverage. So you really cannot withstand sharp moves. So we've got a lot of stop losses being hit. We've got a lot of people just bailing out because they don't want to get margin called and so on. So these are the guys who would panic in this kind of situation. You know, you see a piece of news which is structurally important, fundamentally important. You know the market is going to react. You're long, you're facing an oncoming tidal wave of sell orders. You bail out. The guys who are probably now causing the greens in the markets every now and then are the long-term guys. The guys who say, look, it's come down to a level where it's attractive. I don't mind the volatility short-term because I'm here for the long run. And they start picking up every time there's huge sell-off. And that's where we kind of see the greens intermittently among the reds, so to say.
Right. Okay. Now, one of the things that the markets have definitely not priced in is the potential of America going to war. The issues with Russia and the Ukraine, the military build-up by the Russians to basically circle the Ukraine, and the US's language right now in response to that. How jittery is that going to make markets in the next coming days?
Right now, because of the sentiment in the market, which is very weak, it's something which is catching markets' attention. But to be honest with you, under normal circumstances, when the markets are doing okay, it's a cause for a correction. The market would correct on these kind of news. But at the end of the day, typically speaking, markets see this as a low probability, high impact event. You know, it will come to a point where I don't think both sides want to go to war, because it is really, after all, a big thing, to nuclear powers going to war. But, you know, you'll go to the brink, a lot of brinkmanship and stuff, but they won't really execute whatever threats there. So market typically has that kind of low probability, high impact assessment of this. But because it comes at a time where markets are really quite jittery, so I wouldn't be surprised if this really feeds into markets' fears and this thing gets really like blown up to that extent. We all hope not. But at the same time, I think everybody's just keeping a lookout.
Right. Okay. Now let's talk about the flash PMIs. We'll be getting more timely signals on that, and the COVID-19 Omicron variant, which does continue to impact global economy. Where do you see January's flash PMI data, and how does that impact investor sentiment?
Well, the PMIs are closely looked at, but from where I sit, what I typically do is I look at more leading indicators, and these leading indicators have repercussions on the current PMIs. Leading indicators such as, for example, the OECD releases something called the composite leading indicators, and these are indicators which will track the business cycle maybe 2-3 quarters into the future or in ahead. They start to turn first, and then the economies will turn later. The PMIs will then turn later. We have something called credit impulse indicators. And these are basically indicators of private credit going into the system. And if you follow the actual steps, private credit makes its way into the system. The private credit then ends up in the hands of consumers. Consumers then make purchases and manufacturers have to produce. So at the end of the day, private credit ends up as an increase in PMIs. Again, that takes a lag. So private credit basically is a leading indicator of PMI. What we're seeing both on the leading indicators plus the credit impulse indicators, both of them are suggesting that by the middle of this year, or even in the third or fourth quarter of this year, we will see a sharp slowdown in growth. And therefore, we should be seeing a sharp slowdown in orders and PMIs also. So what I'm looking out for PMIs is basically an indication that they are slowing and potentially turning after we've seen pretty robust growth in terms of, you know, restocking of inventory, the opening, the revenge buying.
revenge buying.
Yeah. All those have actually pushed up a lot of the numbers, the production numbers, the PMI numbers. But what I'm looking at is a potential signal of a U-turn in these numbers.
Okay, so you're saying you see a potential U-turn, but it is a longer term. We're talking months here. We're not talking this week, next week.
No, probably by the middle of this year, we should get an indication of that.
Right, because the last batch of numbers we got from Singapore all looked pretty happy.
Exactly, which is that revenge buying and all this kind of reopening team. Because what happened during the closure was a lot of companies ran down their inventories. A lot of companies weren't able to order as they normally do. So they had to dip into inventories and run down inventories to almost zero. So nothing was in the warehouse. And so therefore, when the economy reopens, they have to do two things. One is to restock back whatever inventory they need. And two is to anticipate demand coming from consumers who now would want to spend, you know, up 2 years not spending, they want to spend money. So this huge demand from companies to restock and to meet demand from consumers, that has been causing the numbers to go sky high.
Okay, I can kind of relate it, you know, being just a few days before Chinese New Year. If you go to the market now, you see what kind of fish you get. Nah. But, you know, this time 2 months from now, it will probably be just fine as far as stocking is concerned.
Yeah.
So that's what you're talking about.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Now, that's an interesting way to look at it, because today, if you look across the market here in Singapore, it is an absolute sea of red. There isn't, you know, a safe haven sector. There isn't, oh, well, you know, the STI is doing okay, but some of the second liners not doing so. It's everybody. And then value turnover as well is a lot higher than activity has been in the last few weeks. So today, it's like, you know, what flashes of green are we seeing?
Well, timing-wise, didn't help. It's the beginning of the year. Mm. Typically, fund managers prior to the start of the year, at the beginning of the year, position themselves. And typically, people position themselves on a positive note. No one looks ahead into the year typically and says that we expect a bloodbath. They typically go long, they make allocations into markets. And so when suddenly this thing hits, everybody scrambles because I'm like maximum long. I expect things at least to go well for the next couple of months, and this thing comes along. So everybody's scrambling to reduce exposure at this particular point. So that's really one of the timing-wise, has also something to do with the sea of red that we're seeing.
Right. Okay. Now, before we let you go, if we looked at a specific sector right now, let's just look at the REITs for 1 second, only because it seems to be such a heavy reporting week. Yeah. For the REITs this week, right? Or actually, yes. for the next few weeks, almost all the REITs are going to be reporting. Now, it's expected that some of those numbers are going to come in looking pretty good. Now, taking what you said about PMIs and a longer point of view, do you think that the REITs in the next few months is something that we should be watching more closely as the year unfolds?
I guess it's really selectively. There are many things that are happening all in conjunction. Rates are going higher. And rates, on one hand, can be also seen as a function of how high rates go. If some rates are typically leveraged instruments. The REIT operator will probably have leverage. The higher your leverage, the more costs you incur if interest rates go up. REITs are also do distribution of their income or their rentals. So they are also seen as a yield play. So what will happen if other instruments yields start to go up, and if the REITs yields don't catch up, then again, on a case-to-case basis, some of these REITs will lose out to competitive instruments or instruments which are competitors to them. That's one thing. And then we have the structural issue, which is, after COVID, do we have a permanent displacement of workers, i.e. structurally, there's not going to be the same amount of demand for offices, there's not going to be the same amount of demand for this and that, and so on. So there are certain REITs which may not go back to the actual norm, because things have really just changed. People are now 50% of workforce is not going to go back permanently, for example. So again, there are a few things going on. I would say that basically, if you study REITs closely, you'll probably be able to pick up some gems there. But you can't really paint it with one whole brush. It really has to have to do with a lot of filtering and individual research.
All right, that sounds like good advice to us. Now, the SDI still in the red, down 1.2% to 3,242. I was hoping that, the number would change, but it didn't. 3,242 points right now. This has been an absolute pleasure. I don't know why we haven't brought you on the show sooner, but I most definitely will be reaching out to you more often
after this. Looking forward to that.
We've been speaking with Sunny Hamid, Director for Wealth Management, Financial Alliance. I'm Clarissa Montero for the Workday Afternoon. This is Money FM 89.3 on Singapore's most influential radio station.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.